Hello and welcome to the Renaissance Foundation podcast. We are a youth charity based in London and we help young people to overcome significant challenges and achieve their full potential. My name is Corey, I'm the media manager at Renaissance Foundation and I'll be your host for today. We support young carers, transitioning hospital patients and at-risk school pupils. And we usually do this by interviewing positive role models and showing those videos to young people or taking young people on inspirational live visits. We are all in isolation at the moment, which makes this quite difficult to do. So what we decided was to create our sessions online, record those and share this content with anyone that couldn't make it to the online session. This week's theme is well-being, a topic I think we could all do with a bit of advice on at the moment. Lucky for us, we reached out to the very inspirational Naomi Jane, founder of the business A Life Less Ordinary Wanted. Naomi is a performance coach, a keynote speaker, and a workshop facilitator. She's collaborated with us for years, but some of her clients have been business leaders, entrepreneurs, and some of the most famous companies in the world. You can find out more about Naomi and A Life Less Ordinary on their website and social media. And if you want to find out more about Renaissance Foundation, head to our website, renaissance-foundation.com. And to see inspirational interviews with positive role models like Serena Williams, Richard Branson and Lewis Hamilton, head straight over to our YouTube channel, Renaissance Charity. Right, now it's time for our interview. Here's our founder, Sat.
So, hey everyone, thanks for making time to catch up today. I want to say a big thank you to Naomi as well, who has really specially made time. And we're very lucky because, one, she's one of the most inspirational people that I know. Two, she's a very successful businesswoman. And I think that's really important as well to have role models as well who are successful businesswomen as well. And the third thing is Naomi's actually traveled the world to do lectures, leadership talks, consulting. And I think we're very lucky to hear she's going to be talking about one aspect of what she does. But if there are other things and advice that people want, then please ask Naomi because she runs a big consultancy company. So we're very lucky to have you to make time today. And we actually met on a leadership NGO course in Brazil over 10 years ago, maybe.
It was 12 years ago.
No way. Oh.
2008.
So we're very, very fortunate for us to have been friends for so long. So appreciate you making time today. And maybe if that's all right, maybe you could just start by letting us give us a bit of background for the young people about what you do.
Gladly. Well, firstly, it's a pleasure to be here, to meet you all and to share a little bit of my journey and hopefully some helpful tips for you all. So thank you for having me. And yep, it's been 12 years since I met this wonderful man. And for me, the work that I do is all about helping people to reach more of their potential. So my business, which is 6 years old, we turned six last month, so we had a quarantine birthday, and we're called A Life Less Ordinary Wanted. And as that said, we do a lot of leadership training, we do coaching, we do psychotherapy and counseling, and I do speaking as well. But all of my work is all about helping people reach more of their potential. And to become more effective leaders, more compassionate, empathic leaders, you know, leaders who care about people and want to see people reach their full potential, as well as do great things in the world. So I have a huge amount of respect and admiration for Sat and the team at Renaissance Foundation. So I think it'd probably be helpful to give you, and I was asked to, a little bit of insight into my start of my career, as well as just sharing with you what I do now. So yeah, this business I've been running for 6 years and I have a small team that work with me as well. We have international clients. So sometimes I'm doing Zoom calls like this with some clients in America, South Africa, across Europe, as well as in London, because at the moment we're all doing video calls, even if we're next door neighbors. Interestingly, my career actually also started out by helping people, but helping young people. And my first business, which I started after I met Sat in Brazil, so back in 2007-08, was a youth engagement agency called the Forward Foundation. And I ran that out of university for 3 years until 2011. And we did a lot of different projects across London. with different groups of young people who perhaps weren't in education, training or employment and needed some support to get back into a good place so that they could tap into more of their potential, make positive decisions and become happier people. So that was my first business. And if you can see, that was all the way back then, 12 years ago. And then now I'm running another business, but this time most of the people that I work with and support are adults. Many of them run their own businesses, or they're quite senior business people in big companies. So in between that business, the Forward Foundation, and the one that I run now, A Life Less Only Wanted, I did work for a charity for a couple of years. And that was helping young people from underrepresented backgrounds get into some of the best universities in the country and some of the most competitive careers. So finance, law, professional services, and the creative industries. And a lot of the young people that I helped were doing their GCSEs, and the program that I ran with the charity helped them to pick the best A levels and help them to work out the most ideal courses to study at university if they were interested in getting into some of these really competitive careers. And lots of these young people didn't have parents that had been to university, so they were going to be the first generation. So it was about helping them to have access to mentors and support and resources to make the best decisions so that they could pursue the career that they really liked the idea of. And then after that charitable job, I was a consultant, so working for somebody else's company. And I was going into big companies like McDonald's, like BP, so companies you're likely to have heard of, and helping them to support their leaders to become more effective. So designing programs that help to give their leaders new skills so that they would be more effective communicators, they would be more aware of people from different backgrounds and how to support everybody equally, how to be more kind and caring as a leader, even when you have to make difficult business decisions. And so I did that work for, again, about 2 years, and I really liked it, but I missed being my own boss. And I knew eventually that I wanted to get out and run my own business again. So it was really all about, okay, how do I manage clients? How do I work with these people in big business? How do I get them to take me seriously as a young woman? And then when I got enough experience and I felt confident enough, I quit that job and I thought, right, that's it. Now I can do it on my own. And I set this business up, and that was 6 years ago. So that's a little bit of my career. And then just in terms of what I've been asked to share with you guys today around the topic of well-being and wellness, I'm a mental health first aider, which means I've done some training with the Mental Health Foundation in the UK. And that means that I'm qualified to support people who are having really challenging times with their mental health, and to support people who are in crisis when it comes to mental health. And I think we'll all agree that at the moment, there's lots and lots of sad news and difficult situations that people are experiencing on a day-to-day basis, and it can be quite overwhelming. And some of my work supporting my clients as a coach does also include supporting them with their mental health to make sure that they're doing the things they need to look after themselves and their loved ones right now when it is quite a stressful time. There's lots of big changes that have happened recently. As we all know, we're all experiencing them. But actually looking after our mental health is really important. And today is World Health Day. So it's actually a great day to talk about mental health, because I think that often mental health is the part of our health that we ignore or we don't talk about because it's not obvious. You know, if we break an arm or if we physically hurt ourselves, it's visible. People say, oh, how are you? What did you do? You know, how long is it going to take you to get better? And people are very comfortable talking about things that they can see most of the time. But if there's something that's not okay with us that people can't see, some of us have different learning challenges, some of us have brains that work in different ways, some of us have conditions that affect our health which are internal, and from experience people don't necessarily find those conversations as easy, and mental health falls into that category because we can't see it, right? So I'm really passionate about helping people with their mental health. And that's also why I have two therapists on my team. So I'm a big advocate, champion of mental health in terms of people getting the help they need. So I have a therapist. I'll be with her tomorrow. I see my therapist every week. But also I have therapists who support my clients. So that's a bit of a context, bit of background for you guys to know a little bit more about my experience. I hope that's helpful. And then I'm really happy to take any questions. If there's any specific tips that you feel would be helpful, anything at all, then please let me know.
Thank you for that. And Nyusha, did you want to, because you prepared some things for today, did you want to sort of run through that with Naomi.
Yeah, if no one else has any questions, I can start off. So I think more generally, how do we take care of ourselves right now at a time where we're so disconnected, where everything seems to kind of be falling apart? Sorry to be so negative, but yeah, I mean, you know, people are having GCSEs cancelled, A-levels cancelled, and you've been told, you know, you've got to work for these things. They're always going to be there. They're so important. And now having this kind of disruption to your life, how can we deal with these things? What steps can we take to kind of both deal with them and kind of accept them?
So first things first, there are lots of things that are not great happening. Things are getting cancelled. You know, things that we've been working towards aren't happening. People are ill. People are also dying. It's a really sad and challenging time. And I think one of the most important things that we first have to do is accept that things aren't great. I think it's very healthy, actually, to recognise how difficult things are and actually recognise how we feel about it. Because this, I've had lots of experiences of feeling really sad about some of the things I've read, and I've actually made the decision to stay quite far away from the news because I find it quite upsetting. I don't know if you guys have the same experience, but I'm choosing not to look at news and look for it. Of course, you're going to get given it anyway, whether you hear somebody else having a conversation or you're on social media. So I think there's something very powerful about limiting what we're exposed to and being careful about what we read. But in terms of what impacts us and affects us, I think the first thing to do is be really kind to yourself, actually, and say, yeah, this is a bit rubbish. And it's okay to not feel great about what's happening, because it isn't great stuff that's happening. And there's so much stuff that is changing and shifting, and so many things that have happened that are completely out of our control. That's also very helpful. There is nothing that anyone on this call could have done to have prevented coronavirus from having the impacts it's had on the world. Not one of us could have stopped it from turning up. And there's some comfort in that, because actually all we can do is the best that we can in the situation we find ourselves in individually. So if we've had exams cancelled, then we need to recognize that we couldn't have stopped that happening. It's not our fault. So we're not going to take on any blame. We're not going to let ourselves feel bad or blame ourselves for it. We're going to recognize how we feel about it, because it's something that's happened to us. And we're going to support ourselves with maybe crying. Maybe we're going to, you know, shout into a pillow if that's what we need to do. Maybe we're going to talk to our best friend about it. Maybe we're going to have somebody that's a mentor or somebody that supports us. Like, I have my therapist who we can talk to confidentially so that we can talk about how we really feel about things. But actually talking about how we feel about things is really powerful. And that sometimes, actually, one of the things I do every day is I have a journal. I actually have it here. I won't show you what's inside because it's a secret, because it's just for me. But this is my journal, and this is right by my bed. And I write in it every morning. It's normally only one page, but sometimes I draw if I don't feel like writing. But it can just be about how I feel and my feelings. And that is really helpful, because then once I've got it out on paper, I've got it out of my head. So if I'm just feeling angry, I could just write how angry I'm feeling and how unfair it is. But once I get it out, I'm sort of letting go a bit of that negative energy, and then I feel a bit lighter. I also meditate. And sometimes I pray. So that might also be something which feels comfortable for people. Whether it's sitting down and listening to something on YouTube that's a calming meditation, you can literally Google something, or a prayer if you've got a specific religion or faith. But actually taking that time to really reflect and connect can help us when we're feeling so disconnected from our friends and the things that feel normal to us. And something someone said to me actually quite recently, which really helped me to just keep a little bit of perspective when it can feel like, what day is it? I literally this morning was like, hold on, is it Friday again yet? No. Okay. It's Tuesday. Right. You know, when we do have that kind of blur with time frame and stuff, it can just be really helpful to remember that every day that passes is a day closer to this being over. I find that a really helpful thing when I feel really stressed out, to just remember every day that passes, I'm a day closer to this being over. And I know online I've seen lots of people talking about new normal. I don't feel like this is a new normal. This doesn't feel normal to me. I don't know about you guys. I think this is a temporary state that we're in at the moment because of the circumstances and because of the situation. but the new normal is going to come after this. You know, when the world does start getting back to normal, that's the new normal. And there will be lessons that we'll have learned from all of these changes and all of these challenges that we can then take and apply to our day-to-day life. But I think that's also helpful to remember, this isn't normal. This situation isn't normal. Our parents, our carers, they've never experienced this either. You know, people who are older than us, we can often go to for support and advice about things that happen in our life. There's nobody that can give us support or advice who's experienced this before, because we're all experiencing it at the same time. You know, my grandma, she's in Wales and she's on her own in her little bungalow. And she's out in the garden for an hour a day planting potatoes and tomatoes and all sorts. You know, and she was in the Royal Air Force in the Second World War. But even she's like, I've never experienced this in my life, Naomi. You know, so I think there's also some comfort in recognizing that we can only do our best and we're learning as we go how to manage this situation, but that it is very powerful to recognize that this isn't anything to do with what we've done. This isn't anything to do with our value. And, you know, with exams being cancelled and things we were working towards kind of being taken away, every single one of us is still valuable, whether we have any qualifications or none. You know, and this situation doesn't change that. So I think there's something quite helpful in recognizing that there's value that we each hold just because we're here and we exist and we're trying and we're working our way through. And that's nothing to do with qualifications or being at school or not, or being similar to other people or not. You know, we've all got different circumstances and we all have different lived experiences. But at the moment, we're all in the same boat. We're all just trying our best. So I think, yeah, there are little bits and pieces that I've just shared in that ramble that hopefully are helpful.
No, I think that was so helpful. It's so different to also hear someone say that it's okay, even like before even putting all the tips that you gave us to use. Like, I know I feel so much calmer just actually hearing someone be like, it's okay, you know, you'll get through this. So thank you for that. Mm-hmm. Does anyone else have any questions? If not, I can continue with mine. If you do, just feel free to unmute yourselves and ask now, but
or you can put it in the chat because I know some people aren't comfy yeah. with speaking on the mic.
Hi Naomi, that was Hello. Really good. I actually enjoyed listening to you and that was very helpful.
Oh, I'm glad. Can you let me know your name as well, because not everybody's got their name visible for me
when
you
Estrella.
Hello. So,
yeah.
Hi Naomi, I'm not sure you can hear me, it's a bit of a time lag.
I can.
Hi. Hi. I was interested about your work on mental health first aid, and I wanted to ask what's the most important thing you learned from there that most people wouldn't think would be your first aid?
Ooh, good question. What's the most important thing I learned in my mental health first aid training? That also is the thing people wouldn't think about. That's the tricky part of that question. I think it's actually similar to what I just shared, is that it's okay not to be okay. And we all have very different periods of mental health throughout our whole life. So we might be mentally healthy all the way up to 35 and then have an experience which really challenges us and a reaction in our brain which is attempting to support us that works out that we have a mental health experience that's not positive, right? We might have quite challenging experiences with mental health as a teenager, and then we hit our 20s and we're absolutely healthy mentally and we never have an issue again. That probably is the most helpful thing I think I learned that isn't what I thought before I went into mental health. You know, if somebody's got a condition like schizophrenia, for example, then sometimes people can have a whole load of different opinions about what that means about that person, but it can show up differently in person to person. If someone's got depression, somebody can have one experience of depression which could last a month and it never affect them again. Other people can dip in and out of depression for their whole life. I didn't really know that before I did the training. I thought if you have depression, then you're going to have it in some way, shape or form forever, right? But in my own experience, it was really helpful because I was diagnosed with clinical depression. And the only difference between depression and clinical depression is that a doctor said that you've got it. But I was diagnosed with clinical depression as a teenager and I was on medication as well to help me manage my depression. And then now I'm 34 and I can have experiences where I feel very low. And sometimes I might even find myself using the word, I feel depressed, but it's definitely not the same as the experiences I had when I was younger, you know? So I think there's variations of different definitions when it comes to mental health conditions, and there's lots of things people don't understand. I learned a lot about conditions like obsessive compulsive disorder, OCD. And that's something that I remember thinking at school, people were like, oh, OCD, I need all my pencils in a straight line. That is not OCD. And actually, that's not helpful for people who actually do genuinely have a condition like obsessive compulsive disorder, for people to use it in that way, which is quite light and quite humorous, but it's not actually accurate, you know. So yeah, I think a couple of things that I learned, just to recap so I'm clear. One, that we can have very different experiences of mental health throughout our whole life, and that's okay, and that's normal as a human navigating this journey. Two, that people can have the same condition or the same label, and it can be very different for them from one person to the other. And three, that we really need to be more careful, I think, about the language that we all use when it comes to mental health. And that's definitely a way to be kinder to people who do have mental health challenges, is to be very mindful. You know, when people say, oh, that's so crazy, is there another word that we could use, which maybe doesn't reference some people who feel that that's the word that gets used to describe them or their condition? You know, if we don't have OCD, maybe we shouldn't joke that that's what we've got, when we like everything in a straight line, or we've got to do our hair 10 times, or, you know, we like to eat our food in a certain order. So those are three things.
Does anyone else have any questions? Yeah, I am.
What free exercises would you recommend to try to relieve a panic attack, for example? So if you're like really caught on some spot and you found out like today was the last day of school and you just lost your coat and now you're home and the school is shut down and you're just panicking and you don't know what to do.
Thank you for that question, because I think that's a really good question that lots of people will be wondering about. Both panic attacks and anxiety attacks are very intense, scary experiences where you don't really feel like you're in control of what's going on with your body. And it can be very confusing. I last had an anxiety attack on a plane in January, and it was really scary. But the things that were really helpful, and they're really helpful for people when they're having any kind of heightened experience like that, is first of all, to remember where you are. So physically become aware of your surroundings. So ideally you put your feet on the floor, or you sit on the floor so you're close to the ground and you remember that there's gravity there that's supporting you. And then what you can do is you can physically look around the room. So one of the exercises my therapist taught me was this one. So you look into each of the four corners of the room. We can all do that now if we're in a room, right? We can look around us and say, okay, there are four corners in this room. My feet are on the ground, or, you know, I'm sitting, my bum's on a chair. Yeah. And think about what the chair feels like. And then sometimes it's helpful as well to touch your hands together and be like, right, I've got my hands are still here, right? I can hold my hands. And actually holding hands, even with ourselves, is a very supporting, loving thing to do. We can hold our own hands. But actually doing that is quite helpful, and it reminds you that you're in your body. So that's the first exercise, that if you get into a space where you're having an anxiety or a panic attack, is to remember you're physically in a space and that space is likely to be supportive. Yeah. The next thing to do is to breathe. There's something called box breathing, which is where you breathe in for 4 seconds. So we can all do that now. Breathe in for 4. And then we hold it for 4. And then we let it out for 8. Then we hold it for 4. Then we breathe in for 4. Then we hold it for 4. Then we breathe out for 8. And that's called box breathing. They use that breathing technique in the Navy to help people in high stress situations stay calm. So it's actually a really helpful thing to do, is to become more conscious of your breath. Yeah. And then the third exercise is affirmations. I don't know if anybody's heard of affirmations before. You can type in the chat box yes if you have, or you can nod at me or shake your head so I can see. Have you heard of affirmations? Yeah, we've got some yeses from our older participants. Okay. So affirmations are basically kind things, kind sentences that you can say to yourself that help you to feel good or help you to remember what's true. One of the best affirmations that I've been using when I've been feeling stressed about coronavirus and everything that's been going on is, I am all right, I am okay. Now, there's all sorts going on outside, but in this situation, in this house, I am all right and I am okay. And most affirmations start with I am. And so you can get to pick your own affirmation. So I encourage everybody right now to think about an affirmation that would be helpful. So if you're having a panic attack, maybe an affirmation that would be helpful is, I am safe. I am safe. And you just keep, you can say it out loud, or even if that's difficult, you can say it in your head. I am safe. I am okay. I am safe. One of the affirmations I'm saying to myself every morning right now is, I am healthy. I am strong. I am resilient, right? And resilient means you feel powerful, you feel capable of dealing with difficult times, if anybody's not sure. So resilient is one of my favorite words right now. We all need a little bit more resilience. We all are resilient. So does that answer your question, Ian? Yeah. So looking around your room, becoming physically aware of where you are, feeling your feet on the floor, remembering gravity's there, then breathing, box breathing. And then saying affirmations to yourself in your head that make you feel safe and supported. And you can make those affirmations up. I say affirmations to myself every morning when I'm brushing my teeth. And if you say them 10 times and you look in the mirror, they're even more powerful.
Just thinking, while we're waiting for some questions, I was wondering if anyone had any bits of advice or things that they've been trying to do that's helped them over the past few weeks that they wanted to share with Naomi and everyone. Because it'd be great to get tips that everyone's doing.
I need tips too. Yeah, yes, please.
I'd like to start. I think this is definitely the most simplest and easiest thing that I could do, but I got this coloring book in Poundland, this Mr. Men coloring book, and I've been coloring in these Mr. Men but with all these different patterns. So yeah, it's simple, no one needs to see it, no one will get to see it even if they ask, but at least I'm having fun.
Nice. That's lovely. That's like me with my journaling. That's what I do privately every day that nobody else sees. Yeah. Everybody should have a safe space, which is just for them.
I had a question. I have a small question if nobody else wants to ask one. How do you deal with like short-term problems or like risks that are sort of like need to be solved now, to like like people that could potentially sort of harm themselves? Have you ever been in a situation that to deal with that, like say with clients or whatever?
I'm sorry, you cut out in the middle, so it was a bit sketchy. Can you just ask the question again?
Sorry, my internet's quite intermittent. My question was about short-term issues or risks that cannot necessarily be solved with like affirmations or things that need to be persistent to show results. So like self-harm or stuff, things of that nature.
So if somebody is self-harming, they need medical support. And if somebody is self-harming, they need to be supported by somebody who has the qualifications to support them with that. And what I would always recommend is that somebody accesses as soon as possible counselling or a counsellor with relevant experience to get to the bottom of why that behaviour is happening and what that person needs to move forward so that they stop wanting or needing to do that to themselves. There's no short-term solutions or something like that, because that is a manifestation of stuff that's going on in the mind. And this is why mental health is so important, because our mental health can affect our physical health. You know, if somebody's in the position to be hurting themselves, then mentally they need support, and that needs to be qualified support. So there's definitely no quick fix. If somebody's in that space, they need specific, tailored one-to-one love and support from a therapist. And there are lots of helplines just on that point. If anybody is in the position where they are feeling really unhappy or really low or feeling really led to do anything that is not good to themselves, there are lots and lots of helplines. And so for you guys as young people, you know, I hope you all know about Childline. I'm sure the Renaissance Foundation has access to a number of resources that they can support you with. But a quick Google on anybody's phone will show some really good confidential support lines that you can call from home or wherever you are to access some support in the immediate if that's something that is a concern. There is always help available, and sometimes the hardest thing to do is to make the first call and access it, but everybody deserves help and everybody deserves to be in a space where their mental health is as healthy as possible. So thank you for asking that. That's a really serious and important topic and question. I don't take that lightly. I just want to reiterate and make sure that everybody knows there is always support available. Nobody has to suffer alone, and the support that you need, even if you haven't found it yet, does exist.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for asking such an important question.
Thanks for it. That's a really helpful answer. And I'm just thinking maybe Noosh and I can talk to you afterwards, or we can create a message that goes to everyone in the group about tips about from today that stood out. Yeah. So, and then we'll link people to any websites and places.
And I feel like Corey's probably been taking good notes.
Yeah, I'm taking notes of everything because I'm going to cut it together for the podcast. So we'll share it. Okay. But something that did pick up on what you just asked, Ananya, and a theme of what Naomi's been saying throughout this this session is that you can be there to support someone, and if you know, if you care about someone, you want to support someone in the right way. So if someone, you're worried about them, their health, it's you listening to them and then helping them in the right way that helps them. Mm-hmm. Because it's not your job to solve that issue, it's your job to help your friend. You're not a medical expert. So mm-hmm. all we can do is listen and help push onto the right avenues. And like Naomi said, it's communication is such an important tool. And if someone knows they have someone to talk to, I think that that goes so. That's such a powerful a device mm-hmm. to have the communication.
I've just seen a question that's come through in the chat box from Ian. Thank you, Ian, for asking this question. Could humour possibly help out a friend or family dealing with suicidal or horrible situations? The short answer is no, because anybody who's moving into a space where they're talking about anything suicidal or hurting themselves, that's probably the only real time when humour is not an appropriate response. Because as you saw, my reaction to that question is very serious. If anybody starts sharing with you that they're having even the thoughts of hurting themselves, that is the most serious thing. And it requires immediate attention and action that you guys are not equipped or qualified to give as support. And even as a coach, my sessions with my clients are confidential. So people tell me all sorts. They tell me all their secrets. That's fine. I won't tell a soul unless they ever tell me that they're thinking about hurting themselves, including suicidal thoughts, or somebody else. Whenever anybody shares that with you, that is when you have permission to break a promise. Okay, so if somebody you know, even a friend or a family member, tells you that they're considering hurting themselves, that is the one time you have permission to break a promise in terms of keeping secrets, because you don't have the resources or the knowledge or the expertise to support that person. And so you can then call somebody else, an adult, so maybe somebody else who you trust will help you work out what the best solution is. But that person needs expert help and support, and that's not going to be you guys. So for me, I have my supervisor that I go to if I have that kind of a challenge. And then I can provide resources and signpost somebody to the support that they need. But thanks for bringing that up, Corey, because that's really important. If you guys have any friends or anybody in your life who shares anything like that with you, it's not your responsibility to hold or manage that situation. You need to get the support that's the expert, that's going to be an adult, it's going to be someone who's got those qualifications. But yes, just to end on that point, Ian, humor is not the best response when it comes to somebody who's in a difficult situation. Empathy is the best response. And empathy is about emotionally saying, you don't know necessarily what the right thing to say is in that moment. It's about being honest. Say, I don't know what to say, but I'm here for you. I care about you. You know, if somebody's thinking about hurting themselves, then it's probably very important for them to know that they're cared about. And that also you can say to them again, it's about being honest. I don't know how to support you with this. So I think I need to talk to somebody else. Or are you talking to somebody else? Have you spoken to an adult about this? You know, rather than being worried potentially about you telling the adult, maybe get them to agree to do it, but you need to know they've done it, right? Does that help answer your question, Ian?
Yes, it does. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, for sure. Humour is really helpful, by the way. Generally, humour is great, but not in that situation.
Can I ask one really quick question before you go as well, please, Naomi?
Yeah, I've got a couple more minutes.
Can you give us any tips on how we can handle grief or help someone who's grieving at the moment? How can we best help that person?
So the best form of support when it comes to somebody who is in grief is compassion. Compassion, and compassion is kindness applied. And so it's emotionally being there for someone as much as you're able to while looking after your own mental health, because it does take emotional energy to be there for someone when they're really upset or grieving. But remember, grief is a process. So depending on where somebody is, they can be having a different experience. Psychologically, we go through 9 different steps when it comes to grieving somebody. And the first is denial. That can be quite a difficult time if somebody's denying that it's happened, right? Because we don't want to lose somebody that we love. And eventually we get to a point of acceptance and integration. But wherever somebody is on that journey, there is the best response is to be there for them as best as you can, which is to let them know that you're there for them. They can talk to you again if that's okay with you, if that is something that you can do safely and comfortably. You don't need to pretend you know how they feel. You don't need to pretend you have the cool things to say, right? They don't have to worry about that. It's actually very healthy to say, I have no idea how you feel, but I'm here for you. I can't imagine how it feels. I lost my grandma in June last year. Excuse my throat. I lost my grandma in June last year, and it was really hard because a lot of people felt like they had to give me advice on what I had to do to feel better. And I didn't want to feel better. I needed to feel sad because that's part of the process. So one thing definitely to not do if you're trying to support someone who's grieving is give them advice, especially if they haven't asked for it. You can choose to be there and you can ask them what they need, right? If they say they want you to send them chocolate in the post, I mean, you know, we're all in different situations right now to normal. So maybe we can't give them a hug in real life. Maybe we can FaceTime them, or maybe it's somebody that we're living with who's grieving, right? But it's much better to ask somebody what they need than to make assumptions or to give advice. And also the other thing not to do is to do comparisons. And so just to give an easy one, say my grandma passed away and someone says, oh yeah, I know how you feel, like my dog died last month. Now they might have a really close relationship with their dog. They might, I'm not denying it, but their dog was not my grandma, right? And so try not to do comparisons as well, because we want to let someone that is grieving know we love them. So we might try and say, oh, I know how you feel because this happened to me. That's not helpful. What's helpful is to be with the person and let them talk about how they're feeling if they want to. Let them know you're there for them. Let them know that if they need anything, you'll do what you can for them. Maybe ask them what they need. Sometimes people need to be alone. Sometimes people need to be listened to. But yeah, the don'ts are easier. So don't compare. Don't worry about feeling like you have to have the right thing to say and don't give advice.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Any final questions? Last round, last chance.
I have a really, really quick one. It's slightly a bit more lighthearted. What do you think about the love languages quiz? Because I've been getting everyone I know to do it, but some people think it's a bit of a gimmick.
I think any quizzes that you can do online for free, raise an eyebrow at. Because there's always another one that offers you the same, you know, the same test, but you end up with a different answer, right? The love languages test is interesting, especially for you guys as young people. Why are you worried about love languages right now? There's other fun things to do. But in terms of your preferences, what I think is helpful about love languages is it helps you to have an understanding of perhaps what you know you like in terms of how you like for people to treat you. So it's actually helpful in family relationships and carer dynamics as well as romance, right, and friends. My number one love language is words of affirmation. Sorry, say that again.
So I thought it was meant to be sort of how you receive and give love and all in all ways.
The focus of it is really about romance, right? Love languages focus is really about romance. But yes, there are all kinds of love. We have love for our friends. We have love for our family. We love, you know, the people that look after us. So it's helpful, I think, to know what you like in terms of how people can show you love. But I think it's a little bit dangerous to start deciding that's the only way you want to be shown it because the quiz told you so. And that's what can sometimes happen with these tests, right? So I love words of affirmation. I love tell people to tell me that they appreciate me. I love to hear things from people. But actually, just because I know that came up on that test as number one, doesn't mean I go around saying to people, my love language is words of affirmation and you've not told me I'm beautiful today, so that's it, it's over, right? And I mean, a good luck to me trying to do that with my sisters, right? So yeah, I think these tests are sometimes helpful for fun, but they get a little bit more challenging if we start to use them prescriptively. We're more flexible than that as humans. We're more complicated than test results at all times.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Although one of my second love languages is physical touch, and I am missing hugs with my friends, for sure.
Yeah, that's my number one. So this.
Yeah, give yourself. You can give yourself self hugs. Self hugs are very in fashion right now.
Always.
Big cuddles. Big self cuddles. We can all do that. That was a good question, though. Okay, I've got a question come through on the chat, and this is the last question I'm going to take, just because I'm mindful of our time, if that's okay. So somebody's asked, what's your opinion on self-diagnosing? So are we talking about mental health? Can you just let me know, just so that I can be clear on exactly what you're asking?
Yeah.
Okay, so what's your opinion on self-diagnosing? All right, a good question. So we all have access to the internet because we're all on this Zoom call, which means we have access to all of the information that humans have ever written down at the click of a button. And more than half of that information online is a bunch of rubbish. So the danger is, I don't know if anybody's ever done this, but I had some, like a little scratch on my hand, and I got a bit worried about it. So I Googled. And oh my goodness, I thought I was going to die in 10 minutes after like reading three links that came up straight away, because there's so much nonsense on there. So the problem is, if you try to self-diagnose yourself, all you have access to, if you're not a medical professional, is the internet, and the internet is full of rubbish. So you don't know, right? And even if you are on a good website, you know, perhaps psychologists, online.com, I don't know if that exists, by the way, but if you're on that website and you say, right, these are my symptoms, and you click through, and then it comes up with some mental health diagnosis, you actually don't have the insight and the expertise to objectively tell whether you have you tick those boxes effectively enough to have that condition. There are good websites. So yes, the NHS is great. The NHS website is fantastic if you want to see if you've got a cold or a flu and know the difference. No website is going to be good for you as individuals if you're trying to work out your mental health, right? It is much, much better to speak to someone. I mean, if you're feeling sad and you're struggling to get out of bed, you might well be having a low mood that day. That doesn't mean that you've got depression. This is why we have to be careful. And as soon as we start saying, I've got depression, when we don't, we're actually telling our brain that we have depression. And our brain's very good at listening to us. So then our brain says, oh, we've got depression. And perhaps other things that weren't an issue before will start turning up. So we have to be really careful with that. If we are concerned about our mental health, we need to speak to someone, a person who's qualified even if we are self-isolating, we still have access to websites where we can book an appointment for free online with someone who is a qualified expert in mental health. So I strongly recommend against self-diagnosing, whilst agreeing that NHS is a good website and has lots of insights. But when it comes to mental health, because it is invisible and because it is so complex, we need to speak to someone who is able to listen objectively and really understand all the different aspects of our life and who we are and the situation we're in to be able to come up with an accurate diagnosis. Because an inaccurate diagnosis is actually sometimes worse than no diagnosis. And that's the risk that we run if we try to diagnose for ourselves. So I hope that answers your question. Okay, I've got a yeah.
Thank you so much, Naomi. That was a really good answer to that question. And it was a really good question. Thanks, Ose. That was a really good question.
Really good question.
Because I've had the same as you, where I've been Googling stuff like on my phone, and then you go to the worst case scenario. You get
if you're not feeling good and you start Googling, you're not going to feel better. Yeah. And again, just as Sat suggested before, I'm very happy to take some time with you guys to pull together a little resource list. So particularly if people did want some help with mental health and weren't sure where to go when it comes to how do I get a diagnosis if I'm worried I have something going on, we can create a little resource list or some links that you guys can send around that'll be helpful. Yes, I am exactly the placebo effect. Seriously. We have to be super careful about the words we use to describe ourselves. Don't ever say, oh, I'm so depressed, if you have not got an actual diagnosis for depression, because you're inviting that as an experience in and you don't want it. Right. Also to say I'm feeling anxious as opposed to I've got anxiety. Right. We want to be careful about how we articulate our mental health experience, because I would rather feel anxious in one moment and then feel better a couple of minutes later than have anxiety all the time. Again, it's what we make space for in our experience. Words are powerful. And on that note, I wish you all safety, wellness, and positive mental health.
Thank you so much, Naomi. That was amazing. So much to take away. Thank you for making the time to speak to us and for all the tips.
Real pleasure. If anybody's got any other questions and for any reason you didn't feel comfortable putting them in the chat or sharing them online, please send them over to the Renaissance team. They will forward them on to me. And then I will happily send my email back over with some answers, and then that can go on to you. I'm always mindful in group conversations and settings like this. Some people might not feel as comfy asking questions, and I want to make sure you all feel that your questions were able to be answered. I'm always happy to help if I can. So guys, take good care of yourself. Drink lots of water, right? That's one thing actually that's a real basic well-being tip, is most of us are dehydrated. Oh, very nice prop there, Ayan. I hope that's water, not tea. Lovely. Tea. tea's not so hydrating. You need 2 cups of water for every cup of tea. But stay hydrated, prioritize getting good sleep, and make sure you find some reason to laugh at least once a day, because that's really good for our immune systems as well. All right? So take good care. It's been a pleasure. And I hope to see you all again soon at some point.
Thanks so much for making time today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jeremy. Real pleasure. Thank you, guys. Oh, yeah, and ginger and lemon helps your immune system. Very true, as does turmeric. Oh, lovely, all these thank yous in the chat. Thank you, guys. It's been a pleasure. Take good care.
Bye. Thanks for today.
Bye.
There was so much good stuff covered in that chat. I just wanted to hear what stood out to everyone else. What did you think, Ananya?
Sorry, did you say what stood out? Was that?
Okay. Yeah.
She's got a really calming presence. I like her. She should do audiobooks.
What did you think, Jessica?
I think she's a well-spoken person. Like, she knows what she's doing in life. She has the right advice and a thoughtful mind to answer certain questions. I think that she's also encouraging very encouraging person to others.
Yeah.
One advice that did stick to me is like, the people who are grieving, kind of don't compare them. Like, whenever I'm like this for other people who are grieving or going through like hard times, I always say, you can get out of your situation. If I can do it, or if someone else can do it, you can do it too. Or I'll say, don't worry, it's going to be okay. I've been through this situation, and I'll give examples of how I got around the certain situation. But when she was saying not to really compare people who are grieving to you, that kind of stuck out to me.
We hope you liked that interview. We found that session really inspirational. If you want to find out more about our guest, Naomi Jane, go to her website, Life Less Ordinary. If you want to find out more about Renaissance Foundation and how to support us, go to our website, renaissance-foundation.com. And if you want to see more inspirational videos, content, you'll see it on our website, social media channels, and on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/renaissancecharity. On there, we have interviews with Lewis Hamilton, Serena Williams, Richard Branson, and more positive role models. So please like, share, and subscribe. And tell your friends about this podcast.